Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 41, March 27th, 2012. We tour Audio Power Labs. Good evening, everybody. I'm back, K9EID, and you are tuned to Ham Nation. It's a program about amateur radio, and we have some fascinating things happen tonight. It's really going to be super, so dial it in, call your friends, and get off the 40 meters. We'll do that later. And joining me tonight, of course, is our wonderful co-host. We've got Gordon West. How are you doing in Southern Cal, Gordo?
I'm okay. I had the right set of headphones on, and good to see you, Bob. And you have to tell us about last week's mission that you were on.
we're working. Yeah. And where's George? George from Mississippi got this really great shirt. I think we ought to go down there and wrangle him for that shirt. Hi, George. How are you?
Hi, Bob. Hi, Gordo. Great to be back again tonight and to have you on here with us again, Bob. How was Kansas? How did all that turn out?
Well, I wasn't in Kansas, but I was close. But we were with Kansas. Is that yeah. Jim? Yeah, we were out with Kansas. Kansas is doing a wonderful thing. The band Kansas, they are going around the country on their 35th anniversary. They wrote all our literature and all the songs for a symphony, and they're going around to colleges playing all their wonderful music, Dust in the Wind, and all those great things with a 40-50-piece symphony, and it is absolutely spectacular. We had, George, you'll be interested in this, we had 56 channels on the mixer, 56, and 38 of them were Heil microphones, which they use on the band. The rest were all for the orchestra, a lot of direct inputs and stuff like that. But, hey, we get the job done. They got a great engineer, Chad Singer. He's been with them for years. And it's just wonderful. And I've been around them for a long time. They bought the first mixer from me way back in the early 70s. And their story was they took that mixer, took it back to Topeka, and mixed it in Cary Livgren, who wrote most of the music. And they recorded Dust in the Wind. And that's from their mouth. I couldn't believe it. I said, you got to be kidding me. And they said, nope. And they brought me a picture of it. So anyway, we had a good time. And then we were with Peter Frampton was out. And he'd had a really wonderful show. If you get the chance to see him, he's also on his 35th anniversary. And then we were with B.B. King last week. So thought about y'all, but most of these halls, we can't even get signals out of them with the cell phone, so I know we couldn't get Skype, and it's really tough. A lot of RF floating around, so we don't even try it. But I missed everybody, and we're back. And we're back for a few weeks, so you'll have to put up with me, and what can I tell you? But it's good to be here. Gordon, how are you doing? Weather good in Southern Cal this week, and bands open? What's going on?
Yeah, weather's great. We have not heard any 2-meter Hawaiian beacon yet, but we're still monitoring, looking to the west. And we're all getting ready for the Milwaukee AES Superfest. That's the big deal, and we'll see you there.
Yeah, we're going to be there. John, if you wouldn't mind, let's put up their website. They're going to live stream this next week. And it'll happen around noontime, Central Time, in Milwaukee. And you can go to that address you see on the bottom of the screen, which is www.ustream.tv/channel Superfest. And if you could go dial that in, why, you'll probably see people you know. Cheryl's going to be with us. Of course, Gordon and I will be there. And Ray Grenier, who puts this all together. And Gordo and I have been going to Superfest since just about the first one. And back in 90, what was it? 94, I think it was, Gordo, 95. And so we love to be there. See all of our friends from the Midwest. At they clean out the warehouse at AES. And we take over. So it'll be fun.
Well, it's going to be fun. And the night before, the Milwaukee Radio Amateur Club is going to have their 95th anniversary bash. I'll be there to talk to the club on that Thursday night. And then during Superfest, Bob, they're going to operate W9 Romeo Hotel, special event station by the Milwaukee Radio Amateur Club. And Dave DeFebo, WB9BEWP, the club president, says, everybody tune in. And if you're local to Milwaukee, come on up and see a club that's been in continuous operation for 95 years. That's just about as long as ham radio, huh?
Yeah, that's it's quite a record. And they're a great club. And we look forward to being there Thursday night and helping them celebrate. So we'll see a lot of you on Friday afternoon and Saturday at the AES store in Milwaukee at AES's Superfest. So come on down, as they say, and we'll be there. And George, I'm sorry you're not going to be there, but you're getting ready to join us at NAB. Is that not right? Next month you're going to be with us?
Yeah, we'll see you at NAB about the middle of next month. I don't know which trip this will be for me. It's probably close to 20, though. Always a big time out there. And we'll be seeing you in Dayton as well.
We're going to have so much fun. So much fun. Well, before we get started and bring our guest on, we have a lot of emails, and I get a lot of phone calls also, which is fine. I love all this stuff. And people will say, you guys get on the air, and what about that chat room thing you keep talking about? Well, a chat room's a lot of fun. And Cheryl's over there watching it right now, getting all the questions. She's going to come on a little later and give us some of the comments and questions from there. But if you're watching and you want to join the chat room, it's very simple. You just dial up. There it is there. Yeah, leave it up for just a minute, John. You go to irc.twit.tv, irc.twit.tv, and it'll take you to the chat room. And look at all that fun stuff. So you you join everybody in the chat room. It's really fun. And they guide this show. I'll tell you that for sure. That's great. And hello, hey, there's Bill, K5LN. Bill runs our 40-meter net, he and Mike and Amanda. So we'll talk about that a little later because we have these after-show nets that are just amazing. I think they had over 60 or 70 check-ins a couple weeks ago. It was really fabulous. Well, we're going to turn our direction to Columbus, Ohio. And they have a very special place there. And they have some very special people there. And most of them are hams. But we want to bring the big ham on and let you learn about Audio Power Labs. But first, let's meet Jerry, KC8ZUL, one of the kingpin AM dudes in America. Hi, Jerry. Welcome.
Hi there. How are you?
We're doing good. It was really a pleasure to talk with you on 75-meter AM last night. Of course, your signal was great, and we're going to learn why in a little while. I'd like for you to tell the audience a little bit about how you got started in ham radio and what ham radio means to you and where it has brought you in your career of what you're doing right now.
Well, I don't know where to start, except I was a lucky guy and got a early exposure to electronics, and my grandfather, he worked for Bendix, and that was in a tube era, you know, as a kid. And I spent a lot of time in my grandfather's basement. My dad would say things like, you're not out playing baseball with the other kids. Nothing good will happen to the for you, you know. But it turned out to be an education and got me a great interest in radio and electronics. My grandfather was involved before there were licenses, and he did some experiments in New York. I grew up in New Jersey, where they put what they tested FM stereo by putting one channel on FM and one channel on AM. And he actually built a radio that could do it. He built almost everything and learned to use the chassis punch, the metal lathe, and a lot of good basics. And probably got a pretty good exposure to fluorescent paint, too. We're painting the dials of all the aircraft stuff. And you know, you go down the basement, all these meters would glow at you. But I really a digital software guy, and my career was in software engineering. But one day I picked up that Don Lancaster's TV typewriter cookbook and said, hey, I can do TTL. And sure enough. And after I learned about decoupling, we built a couple circuit boards that were quite a success, plugged into the DEC PDP-11 series computers and made a DEC computer look like it was an IBM attached processor. And we didn't have anything about knew much about marketing, but it seems like at least 1,000 people wanted one of those. And we sold it for an outrageous amount of money. And here we are. After that, I had a public company. And public company did pretty well doing telemetry for the telephone industry. Put a box in our in the central office, and our box would watch everything from the kerosene and in the tanks and generators and power, and also look at the lights on the towers and microwave signal levels and switching equipment. At any rate, that was quite a success. And I retired from that, had more time for amateur radio, and that was about the time they dropped code, and I figured I was a shortwave listener for years, and boy, I remember the battle. Everybody wanted to keep the code, you know, and I'm just the kind of guy who's trying to keep out. I'm a lot of fun, you know. So that's how it started, and after I retired, we wanted to play radio, and I'd seen these guys collecting these broadcast rigs. Matter of fact, one night I got on 3885 on sideband, you know, with a Kenwood TS-2000 plastic radio and linear, and I said, who are these guys? I can't hear them real well. And the guy said, hey, switch to AM. I said, what? What's AM? So the rest is history. And every once in a while, a guy like me stumbles onto 3885, and the same thing happens, you know. But I enjoy the people there, too. There's an enormous amount of smart guys on 85, and, you know, they actually have to play with the radio. They actually have to pull out a soldering iron. And there's just a wealth of knowledge. So this one guy was collecting heavy metal, and, man, he had a beautiful signal. And my TS-2000, you know, it's not made for that. And I just thought I'm going to buy one. So I started with an RCA, VTA-1. And I remember I rented a panel truck and went down to Sparta, Tennessee. And it's all good. Half of the transmitters I have here were the backup transmitter for a religious station or for some obscure little town. And usually when I pick them up, the guy says, hey, it works. It used to work, you know. But I turn it on, no way it ever worked. I pay a buck a pound, by the way. I pay a buck a pound. Yeah. So that's how it started. I got some kind of weird Jones for this. No one with a straitjacket has come to it to take me away yet. It's apparently legal. But well, I'm trying to keep them alive.
Let me tell you, Jerry, I was there in December and went to see my friend Ryan, one of your chief guys who's running the camera there. He's on the other side tonight. Ryan and I have, the theater pipe organ as a common denominator. But I went to see him.
That's a really sick interest.
I have to tell you, I didn't know what I was getting into. I went to see Ryan, and I'm thinking, well, I know he's got this job at this audio lab. All of a sudden, I walk in, and it's like being in a forest, but the trees are all RCA and Collins, and my God, how many broadcast transmitters do you have in your collection?
Well, I think there's about, with the ones at the house, about 30. There's some parts cows too, which we're not counting. But we plan if it's okay to take you down through a tour of all the transmitters.
Well, yeah. Let's see if this works. I mean, this is Ham Nation. We have no legitimate plans here other than we have fun. So let's take a walk and show
okay,
the audience great. That's watching.
I was
going to
start the studio here and explain that. By the way, this is all hacked together with friction tape and very, very long studio audio cables. So we don't normally do this either. So
it's got to be the station here.
This is the studio, and we need to have a special studio. It's got some soundproofing because these machines make a hell of a lot of noise. They got big blowers in them, and we'll fire some of them up, and you'll get the picture. Basically, the setup here is, you know, I'm a software guy, so I am so busy working on the transmitters that all the receivers are solid state. I'm using a Flex 3000. I'm not even using that as my exciter. I'm just using that on the receive side. We've also got an ICOM 718 that's the exciter for all the transmitters. And then if you can get a shot of this, we built this fine controller, which goes, which used a Nixie tube as its indicator to switch transmitters. So we moved the audio, the audio chain is repeated by a program amplifier, and it switches the exciter input and the transmitter antenna output through two parallel antenna switches. And then up here we've got the transmit-receive relay set up and a bunch of antenna switching. And we've got a loop antenna, 530-foot loop antenna on the roof of the building, plus a dipole. We had a vertical, but that was crappy, so we took it down. We do have an R390 here. We have an R390 here, still a great receiver, but I can't live with it. The Spectrum, you know, the Spectrum analyzer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got a mixer, dummy load. Everyone should own one if you're on AM because things will go wrong. That's a feature.
Yes.
And the Kenwood has dust on it. We got an oscilloscope so we can watch a pattern. We will not transmit during this session because we pretty much roar through everything electronic. This hasn't been tested. I don't think I have enough RF jokes on this.
Jerry, we on Ham Nation, we know real time about transmitting while you're on the internet. Sometimes your signal goes away big time. Gordo can write a chapter on that, but we won't get into that, will we, Gordon? But Jerry, let's take a walk. Let's see what you got on the other side of that wall, please.
Very good.
And while he's walking, I want everybody to understand what he said. He is driving these big transmitters with an ICOM 718. And
yeah,
so for all of you that, all of you that look at this, parts, huh?
Yeah, this is the inventory of spares we've got. These are various failed experiments. Some of these are things to play with. There's a Gates modulation analyzer, which goes with the vintage of the equipment. There's a Hamelin HQ on the side because it needs some work, and we have receivers. And then, you know, if you ever need any problems with one of the power adjustment rheostats, we have those. This is a 500-watt rheostat.
Look at that rheostat. Oh my.
It's the hardest thing to get. It's like a hinge for a door. So we're down here.
Oh, this is great.
So we're going to turn one on here. This is the two Collins twins here. This is a 20V3, and they use 4400s. You can see they're very well behaved. You get a shot there, maybe inside. And what we've done is modified the tank box. And we'll take you a little bit through this one, and then the rest we'll give you just an overview. This one, by the way, is my portable 20V3. It goes off-road on an F-150. Now, I can't explain why we did that, but it's fine. We've been driving with a group of amateurs called the Hill Jerks to a place in West Virginia to get up 3,000 feet and makes hanging the antenna a little easier. And I'm going to take this to Dayton, too. Not many people know a Ford F-150 had a Collins 20V3 option. Okay. This box is a tuner, antenna tuner. I won't open that, but you can have a look inside of one of these. Look inside the one that's not on.
Yeah, make sure it's not on. Well, of course, the interlock's going to let you do this.
These are some of the modifications. We take the tank box and rebuild it to go multi-band. We've got shunts on it and high-voltage relays to adjust the capacitance and the inductance of the tank box. And that's the major change we make. We clean up the power supplies a little, put solid-state rectifiers in there, get an idea of the kind of iron that's in a broadcast rig. This thing weighs about 1,600 pounds.
Wow.
It's one of the lighter ones. That's a mod transformer, high voltage. If you could get a shot of that, put this controller in every one of them. It's a little electronic controller we designed using a little PAL. So we could tell the personality of every transmitter. And then we changed the PAL for that transmitter. So it provides a universal interface to the controller you saw selecting the transmitters. And the Gazentas and Gazatas are audio, exciter, antenna, power, and the control bus.
That's wonderful. What kind of plate voltage does that particular transmitter have?
This transmitter, I think, wins the least watts per pound. This is a Collins 20T, built in 46. It uses 833s. Check us out.
Look at that.
It's a beautiful thing.
Aren't
so there are some of the tubes we use in the audio amplifier, same tubes. And this is just unbelievably built. This door weighs about 150 pounds. It's got all the meters on it. And this box is just the audio section. And overload relays. Craziness.
Beautiful. To me, it's always pieces of art, Jerry. I love that. I grew up around all
these things. Made in New Jersey. This is a CCA AM2500D.
Huh. Look at that.
This makes a heap of power.
Ooh.
And up top, you can see it's got its own ductwork to take the hot air out. This one we can't really operate and talk.
Man.
And then over here, this base shows the back of the machines and Tinkwell. Quick look here. This shows you the way these things were built. This is the back of the Collins. It's unbelievable. Laced wiring. This is some of our modifications. It's the vacuum. This is the PI network. And they're motorized with stepper motors. So we can adjust this one simply by throwing a band switch. It's still a physics experiment, so you have to trim it. That's the B-plus transformer.
My goodness.
This next rig in the next aisle has its own external three-phase transformer. It's an RCA.
Three-phase. That's wonderful. BC-610 made by Helicrafters right there. Transmitter into BT.
Beautifully done.
Yeah.
Yeah, this RCA Ampliphase. This was in the Sears Tower about 5 years ago as the backup transmitter for WMAQ. And it's really a 1,000-watt, very close to the 1,000-watt version with a amplifier on the back end of it. And I only collect tubes that glow. These don't, but these do. So we're good. And down here, you get an idea of the fan. I don't know if you can see that. That moves a lot. And this... Yeah. Crazy enough, this little thing, that's the PA tuning.
Yeah.
And this is the fine rig here. This is a built by Collins for the Navy. It's 1950s. It used 41000. And it's got this auto tuner that you've seen maybe on ART-13. I had to have this because of the, it's not broadcast, but it has the auto tuner. It's just too beautiful when it works. And it's also called an FRT-34, called the FART-24.
Mm-hmm.
I will switch over here. This is, I think, the most beautiful rig to collect. This is the Western Electric 433A. Look at the glasswork in this, mother.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
You got your solid state, you got your hollow state.
Mm.
These are the single frequency oscillators. There was a backup. And they even have a thermometer glass on this one. And there's been some hacking around in here we didn't do. We get them in here, we power wash them, and then we dry them out with, put them in a hot room, dry them out, and check the gauges. And this is Art Deco. Matter of fact, this amplifier transmitter was designed by Western. Inside here is just a standard Western relay rack. And look at this. Do you think they got enough dials? No, they don't. Look over here. Western Electric went completely crazy. It's a beautiful piece of engineering, but in a book it says that the housing was styled by some famous industrial designer. So they cared about this.
Yeah.
And it's would you put that in the dumpster?
That's gorgeous.
Over here, we go back to here. This is that's a Raytheon. Just got this the other day. It's a Raytheon RA250. Raytheon light meters apparently haven't discovered the switch yet. The selector switch was a push for them. But it is kind of cool having everything metered. And just going to need some work. This is a not so well-known brand. It's an ITA. And you have to open a lot of chassis to see the glass work. But it does have glass. And this is one of my favorites here. This is a Gates BC1F. This is one whole rack. It's like welded together. It's built on the floor of Gates. And we could tell not a lot of jigs were used. Because the shims came with each door, you know, different shims. But this is a two 833s by two 833s. And BC1F stands for fat. It weighs about 2,700 pounds. Wow. 10 meters, no weighting. And this one we're restoring. This is going to be, it's American made, you know. So we're painting it candy apple red. And we're going to use to bring that to the radio show. We'll be there with our big monster truck.
Will that be coming to Dayton?
This is a more modern creation. This is our 50-watt amplifier.
There we go.
I'm going to try and explain what it is. You want to speak?
This is beautiful stuff here. That's their new audio amp that Ryan has designed. And it uses 572s. Look at that. Beautiful work. Just coming on the market. So we'll be hearing more about that one. We know about the big one that they showed at CES, but this is their newest one that Ryan's been working on. Ooh, they might have lost their audio. The cool thing about this is that for me, I saw, there we go.
You guys hear us at all?
Oh, yeah, we do right now. Yeah, I didn't hear you before, so we've been kind of filling in before you.
Go back there.
Got out of range of your wireless, probably. Orion had that on a circuit board, and I was really intrigued by seeing that prototype on this double-sided board that he had built. And we just saw the finished prototype there. That could have been production also, but it's a brand new amplifier. And I think it's 75 watts of AM using 572Bs. So Jerry loves tubes, as you can see. And he got it from collecting these big transmitters. And as I said earlier, he uses a 718 to drive one of those. When he's on 75 meters at night, you'll hear him, but he dials in the frequency with his 718 transmitter, and that drives some of those transmitters with the big tubes. And we're putting out probably 300 watts of carrier, but when you modulate it, it'll be above that. Hey, George, tell us about that, a little bit about how much carrier and how much audio. Describe that a little bit for everybody.
Well, on these particular vintage AM transmitters, and probably most that are used in broadcast, you have to have an equal amount of audio to the carrier power, because the audio is injected right to the output of the RF final there. You know, in ham rigs, we usually modulate one of the lower stages, and then we have our amplifiers after that. Well, to get the best efficiency out of these transmitters, the way that they would run the tubes, if they ran them all Class A, they'd have to have really big tubes, and that would take a lot of energy to run. So they can get by with using a lower class RF final if they put the modulation right in the final output there. So that's why you got four of those tubes in there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Well, one of the things that we want to do here is Jerry has given us some things to give away, and we're very excited about this. He gave us a pair of the 833 tubes. And these are just beautiful. A lot of guys make lamps out of them. But what we're going to do, we have two of these, and we have six of the shirts that you saw him wearing. Make sure that doesn't roll off on the floor. Wouldn't that be terrible? This is the great shirt that they have, which is kind of cool. And so we're going to give these away. And what we're going to do is we're going to kick this back to George, and he's going to give you a couple of questions. Tonight, live, we're going to do this for you that are watching, listening live. We're going to give one tube and three shirts away. But we're also going to ask another set of questions. So all of you that are listening to this and watching it on the replay, you'll have a week to contact George's address. So, George, go ahead and kick this off with the questions, and let's see what we can give away here.
Okay, the questions this time will be for the chat room. And the first person to answer these questions correctly will win the prizes. And for the T-shirt, since we have three of them to give away, we'll take the first three correct answers. Bob, I contacted Cheryl earlier and gave her the answers to the questions, so that she would be in the loop since she's watching the chat room for us. And the other tube and other three T-shirts we're going to give away. It'll be right after Smoke and Solder where we have our regular contest segment. So to win one of the tubes there, the 833A tube, we've got a simple question here. What is the filament voltage and filament current of that tube? Now, the first person to answer correctly is going to win that tube. Now, for the T-shirts, how many elements does that 833A tube have? Is it 3, 4, 5? Send that into the chat room there to Cheryl, and she will be monitoring. And the first three people to get that answer will win a free T-shirt. So we'll know who won here in just a few minutes, Bob. I see the chat room is filling up quickly.
Oh, that's great. Well, we're going to give away one of those beautiful 833s. And, hey, who knows? Maybe somebody will build a transmitter around it or a lamp or whatever. We'll need to know who wins it and what they do with it. And then we're going to have the T-shirts. So let's see if the guys, did you get back, Jerry? Did you get back on the scene with us? See if they got back. They might not. They might have lost their whole signal. But, boy, do we appreciate that. That was so cool. And one thing I wanted to say before we get away and switch to Don for Newsline, I've had a couple of people ask me about the microphone tonight. This is a Finn microphone that we build, and you would note that he, Jerry also had a Finn in his station. That's what he uses on AM. And the reason I did it is because this weekend, the great movie Hunger Games came out, and they use a Heil Finn for the microphone, and John has a picture of that from the film. We were very, very happy that they came to us some time ago and bought several of these, said, well, we're going to do a film, and maybe it'll be there. Well, here it is in the biggest film of the year. So, John, let's see if we can bring up that picture of the Finn in the Hunger Game movie. We were very happy about this. And, hey, there it is right there. There's a lot of different scenes with it throughout the movie. And here again, ham radio plays a part in a major film. And we're so honored to be able to do that. And it was a fun thing for me to design. Joe said to me, Walsh, my best friend, he said some time ago, you need to build me a microphone that looks like the front end of a 48 Pontiac. So I did. I captured the look of a 1933 microphone that was made by Turner. And, of course, we used the bottom off of our Heritage and changed it a little bit. We have lights inside it, and you apply power, and it lights up for you. So fun stuff. Well, let's see what we have for news tonight. And Don is here with us, so let's switch over to Newsline and catch up a little bit on the news of amateur radio tonight. Don Wilbanks, it's all yours.
Coming to you from the New Orleans Ham Fest in New Orleans, Louisiana, from Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1804, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Tuesday, March 27, 2012. A powerful and prolonged earthquake rocked parts of Mexico Tuesday, March 20th. The 7.6 magnitude trembler was centered near the Pacific Coast resort town of Acapulco. According to news reports, some homes were toppled near the quake's epicenter. Electricity and telephone communications was lost for a time, but despite the quake's power, Mexico's President Felipe Calderon and officials across the country said there were no reports of serious injuries. While there was some damage to the nation's internal communications infrastructure, Mexico's connection with the outside world, for the most part, remained unscathed. So far, nothing's been heard about activation of any domestic Mexican ham radio emergency group. As we go to air, the only international ham radio operations we've heard about is a group called the International Radio Emergency Support Coalition. IRESC President Erkan Canel, TA-0U in Istanbul, Turkey, worked with about eight or nine hams in Mexico, passing early damage assessment reports to the European continent. While telephone and cell service was jammed, as is the case after events like this, broadband connections were still open and quite useful. Anyone watching or listening to broadcast news reports often heard tweets from residents of the quake-hit area being quoted as news sources and giving eyewitness accounts via Twitter. Also, broadcast news organizations worldwide were asking people with relatives in the quake zone to call in or post to the station's website the latest news they might have. In other words, news organizations were literally handling health and welfare traffic that until a year or two ago was primarily the domain of radio amateurs involved in emergency communications. The role of amateur radio in emergency communications continues to grow and will become even more vital in the future. That was the message from Connecticut Section Emergency Coordinator Wayne Gronlund, N1CLV, at the annual meeting of that state's Ares groups over the weekend of March 17th and 18th. According to Gronlund, a series of natural disasters in 2011 showcased the importance of amateur radio in emergency situations. These included Tropical Storm Irene, a preseason nor'easter in October, and the tornadoes that swept western Massachusetts last summer. N1CLV noted that the snowstorm in particular strained the system because phone and electrical service were disrupted for up to 2 weeks, especially in the Farmington area. These two disasters led to the formation of Governor Daniel Malloy's two-storm study inquiry. Among the panel's recommendations, holding real-time exercise this year, one that would involve municipalities, the Red Cross, and Ares to determine what assets are available and what improvement is needed. Such a statewide exercise is now scheduled for July 28th to the 30th and will involve amateur radio resources. If you were to get pulled over this morning and told that you're getting a ticket for distracted driving because you took a sip of coffee during your morning commute, would you be surprised? If a Missouri Senate bill written by Senator Bill Stauffer of Saline County passes, this is what Missouri drivers could be facing. Senate Bill 717 would make it a Class C misdemeanor to, quote, fail to give full time and attention to the operation of the motor vehicle, fail to maintain a proper lookout while operating a motor vehicle, or engage in any other activity which causes the operator to be distracted from the primary mission of driving such motor vehicle. Now, there are no exceptions for hands-free devices, two-way radio, or CB-type radios, or for operators of emergency vehicles or law enforcement personnel. If passed as written, the police officer writing the ticket to enforce this would most likely have to write themselves a ticket for distracted driving as well. And some good news about Hamset VO52. A report received from the IRSO Satellite Center in Bangalore, India on March 14th says VO52 is back on the air and operating properly. According to VU2WMY, commands to reactivate Dutch-built PE1RAH orbital transponder on VO52 were sent during an ascending pass over India. The commands were acknowledged and confirmed by return telemetry. At the same time, the beacon signal was heard loud and strong in Bangalore. Stations in Europe and North America reported good signals from VO52 immediately after the transponder was activated. Two-way contacts were soon completed through the Hamset VO52 transponder. Well, that'll do it from Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news brought to you each and every week for nearly 35 years at www.arnewsline.org. Here on the floor of the New Orleans Ham Fest in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation.
Oh, good show, Don. You're always the best. We love it. Thank you so much for doing that. And we're going to try to get contact with Amanda here in just a minute. While we're doing that, I need to mention to you that we have one of the viewers tonight is coming from New Orleans area, Nick Tusa. Nick is the premier central electronics rebuilder. And we're going to have Nick on here after Dayton. He's got a real special thing coming up with Wes Shum. You know, Wes is the guy that really brought single sideband into amateur radio back in the mid-40s. And that transmitter, you know, I talk about this a lot. That 20A was my college education. And we'll talk about that one of these days. I want to get that on and show you guys how that all tunes up. It's an amazing radio. Well, it's a transmitter, a phasing rig, and that's how we learned so much about phasing. And I built that from a kit, and he rebuilt it, and he's going to come on and talk about all that. But we're going to have an opportunity to go to Wes Shum's home in June or July, one of those dates. I'll have to bring that to you, but we're going to have Nick on, and he'll tell you all about it. Maybe we'll have Wes on. Think about that. The guy that really founded single sideband, it is going to be with, that would be really cool, and we're trying to work that out. So I hope Nick can make it happen. So let's see what's going on in Colorado. Amanda and Jeff. Amanda, how are you doing? Everything okay?
Yeah, everything's great. Of course, my computer just freaked out right before I got called, but I got it started up and we're doing good now. So, and happy birthday, Grandma, who just turned 84 today. I love you, Grandma, and I think she's watching. Happy birthday. And Bob, we have something special for you that one of our ham friends found. So go ahead. I'm going to have my producer man here show it to everybody. CQ magazine, and we flip to, I don't know what page it is, Bob, but you know.
1963. That's right.
Look there at you that go. Handsome guy. Who is that? That is so cute.
I wrote a weekly, think about this now, a monthly column called VHF Single Sideband in 1963 in CQ Magazine, because very few guys were on single sideband, and it was that transmitter into one of my transverters that was in one of those magazines to show you how to build it, that how we got there. So that's another story for another day. Thank you for that. We'll have to grab a hold of that one of these days. Well, what kind of tales do we have? What's going on in our crazy world of ham radio today?
Well, and of course, that was thanks to Marv, KA0SKK. Anyhow, what do we have? I got a story this week that inspired me. So next week, you guys, I'm going to be asking everybody to tell me how they got their significant other into ham radio. So with that, I'll share this story. This comes from KC9UDA. That's Tom, and he's in Wisconsin. So thanks, Tom, for sending the story in. And it's about him and his wife. He was out on a weather watch looking for storms, and he was checking into his local weather net to report it. And while they're there, they're moving on along to the next spot they're going to go looking for spotting, and lightning struck about 15 feet away from the car. And I think this is one of the first times he had convinced his wife to come out on a storm chasing event with him. So she jumped about 20 feet. He probably jumped about the same. And 20 minutes later, after they were going home together, she said she definitely wanted to get her ham ticket so more and more people could report in on these storms, so nobody else would have to be stuck out in a car with their husband like that. So I really appreciated that. And good story there, Tom. And so with that, you guys, make sure you remember to send me your stories at hamtales@live.com. And this week I'm looking for how you got your wife or husband into ham radio. I bet those are going to be some great stories.
Oh, hey, that's great.
You want to tell our listeners, because there's a lot of people that listen to the podcast, you spell out tales because they might get it wrong, Amanda. Let's tell them where they can send their stories to you.
Right. Absolutely. It's HAMTAILS. hamtales@live.com, you guys. Thank you so much.
Okay. And we're going to see you, I guess, on 7268. We'll find out here just a little while what frequency everybody's going to take off at, and we'll see you there, right?
Okay. Yep. I'll be on 40.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Well, always enjoy all of those nice stories that the guys are sending you. So send some more, everybody. We'll squeeze it in somehow. So Gordo, you're up. You have some really cool things going on. So let's see what's happening in Costa Mesa.
Well, thanks, Bob. And we'll be real quick. We want to remind everybody that Don Wilbanks tonight is going to be doing the D-Star Roundtable. And George can give us the exact spot to tune in, the correct reflector. And again, we look forward to seeing everybody this coming weekend at the AES Superfest. And remember that the Milwaukee Radio Amateur Club holding their 95th anniversary, both on the air as well as at Superfest. So, Bob, back to you, and we'll have next week the M-squared shots of their inside antenna manufacturing. We'll do that next week. Back to you, Bob.
Okay, Gordon. Well, we're really looking forward to being with you this weekend in Milwaukee with Cheryl and the whole gang, and especially Ray Grenier. Very, very special person, and we're excited to be there. Well, the smoke is starting to billow from south, so I guess we better go check out what's happening in Mississippi. George, what's up on tap tonight?
Well, we're going to do a little playing around with the MFJ-259B tonight to look at one of the unique modes that it does. And speaking of smoke, there's going to be a special event this weekend in North Mississippi here, I believe. It's the 150th anniversary of the Battle of Shiloh, and they'll be operating from 1,500 Zulu to 500 Zulu on March the 30th and 31st. So you might want to tune in and look around and find that special event station. I don't know the frequencies, but I'm sure you'll find it if you look around a little bit. Well, this week, I did something a little different. You know, every now and then, we don't build something. We just take a look at some of the gear we have, and that's what we did this week. So, John, if you've got the video ready to go. This week on Smoke and Solder, we're going to talk about test equipment again. Let's say we've got a bundle of RG8 cable here, and we don't know how long it is, and we want to determine that without unrolling it and measuring it out. Well, there's a couple of ways we can do that mechanically. We can take a tape measure and measure the circumference of the bundle. I measure this as 45 inches. Then we can count the number of turns that are in the roll, which are 14. Then we'll multiply the 45 inches by 14 turns, and that gives us 630. We'll divide that by 12, and it tells us it's 52.5 feet. Now, when I bought this, it was supposed to be 50 feet of cable, so it could be a little bit over that. And there's another way that we can measure this, and that is to take a ruler and measure the diameter of the cable. I'll sort of measure from the middle of the roll here, and I've got 13 inches. We'll take that diameter of 13 inches and multiply that by pi, which is 3.14, and that tells us that the circumference is 40.82 inches. A little less than the 45 we measured earlier. Now we'll take that number and multiply it by the 14 turns to get the number of inches. Then we'll divide that by 12 to get the number of feet, and it says it's 47.62 feet. So either way we measure it, we are about 2.5 feet from being correct, which we thought was 50 feet. So that's close enough for just a rough guess. Now, before we move on, I'll show you one more shortcut. Some cable has a number of feet printed right on the jacket. In this case, you could get the reading off either end of the cable, do a little subtraction, and come up with the actual number of feet that you've got. Now, there are some electrical instruments that you can use to measure cable length, perhaps a micro-ohm meter, but that'll only probably get you within 100 feet on a real long piece of cable. You could also use a time domain reflectometer, but the instrument that most of us have would be an antenna analyzer. Now, there's a number of companies that make these devices, but perhaps the most popular one is the MFJ-259B, so that's what we'll look at. I've got a little piece of RG58U cable here that's about 6.5 feet long, so let's use that for our first test. We'll take a dummy load and connect one end of the cable to that, and the other end of the cable will connect to the jack on the antenna analyzer. Now we need to switch the unit to advanced mode, so we hold down the gate and the mode button at the same time. Once we're there, we push the mode button until we find distance to fault in feet. Now at this point, we will go to where it says first on the display. And then we need to turn our frequency ranges here until we find the lowest impedance reading. And it looks like that one's the lowest. So now we'll fine-tune the frequency to null out the X and make it zero. Well, guess what? No matter what we do, we can't make X equal zero. And there's a good reason for that. This measurement is distance to fault. And since we're connected to a dummy load, there is no fault. We can create one, though, easy enough. We just disconnect the dummy load, and we can leave one end of the cable open, or we could put a short there. Either way would be a fault. Let's start over by hitting the gate button to make the display safe first. Then we'll adjust the frequency to make X on the digital display read zero. Then we'll hit gate again for the display to display second, and we'll turn the frequency range down one notch. Now we'll take the frequency fine-tuning again and adjust for an X of zero once more. Once we get there, we hit the gate, and it tells us that it's 9.9 feet times the velocity factor. Now, the velocity factor of this belt and cable I'm using is 0.66. So if we take the 9.9 feet and multiply it by 0.66, the velocity factor, that tells us this cable is about 6.5 feet long. That measurement was taken with the cable open. Now let's try it with a short. I've taken an old T-connector here and stuck a piece of wire down in there to create a short. And we'll plug that on the end of our cable here. And we'll go through the proceedings again. This time we read 10 feet to the distance to fault. So we'll take that 10 feet and multiply it by the 0.66 velocity factor. And that gives us 6.6 feet. So we're pretty close doing it this way too. Now let's try another measurement using a longer piece of cable. This time we're going to use a 100-foot piece of RG8U that was made by JSC. Its velocity factor is 0.78. As before, we'll select first on the display, then we'll choose a frequency range, and we'll begin adjusting the frequency to null out the X reading. Now, I can't quite get it to zero here. I can only get to one, but they say a couple of ohms will be okay for this. Next, we'll hit gate and go to second, go down a frequency range, and we'll null out X again. This time, we do get the X to go down to zero. Then we'll hit the gate one final time, and that tells us it's 129.5 feet times the velocity factor, which is 0.78, and that equals 101.01 feet, which is pretty close for a 100-foot roll of coax. I haven't actually measured this roll, and I really don't intend to. That test was with the cable open. Let's try it again. I've got an old SO239 here with a shorting jumper on the end of it. We'll screw that on and see how this measures. We'll go to first. Select a frequency range that has a low impedance. Adjust for zero reactance. Now we'll step down one range on our counter after going to number two with the mode. And we'll adjust for zero once more. We'll hit the gate one final time. And that tells us it's 131.5 feet, which we'll multiply by the velocity factor of 0.78, and it gives us 102.57 feet, which is pretty close on a 100-foot roll of cable. Now, just because we can, we'll go to another frequency range on the antenna analyzer here, and see how that measures, because you really don't know what range you should start on. So with the display showing first, I'll null X out to zero. Then we'll put the display on second, step down a frequency range, and null X again to zero. Now this shows we've got 6.4 feet. Obviously that's not correct. The instructions say that you need to make the measurements on several different frequency ranges in order to find the correct one. Now, I did notice that on some ranges, It seemed like there were multiple dips as I turned the frequency control, and that should be a hint right there that we're not on the correct range. Now, some of you may not have access to sophisticated equipment like the antenna analyzer or a ruler. In this case, you can always fall back to the old tried and true scientific method. But if you haven't quite hit your stride yet today, you may just come up with the wrong answer. Well, that was a lot of fun. And yeah, you know, I probably could have rolled out that cable and took a yardstick and determined how long it was. But sometimes you just don't want to unroll it, or maybe it's stretched out somewhere that you can't get to both ends of it. So that's one way you can do it. Another good use for an antenna analyzer.
Absolutely.
Well, this week's contest, we had the question of what was behind Shorty. You remember Shorty was in last week with the wind system, and there was a big refrigerator-sized box behind him. And the guy who won this week is Skeeter Nash, N5ASH. And he said the large item behind Shorty was a Bauer AM transmitter. Unfortunately, I couldn't tell what model it was, but it was definitely a Bauer broadcast transmitter. And Skeeter, you're right. That's exactly what it was. So you win the MFJ 24-hour clock. And I've got some more of these. They sent me another box of these and some other prizes for us to use on our contest here. So thanks to MFJ for that. And for next week's contest, we're going to give away another one of those 833A tubes. What do you say, Bob?
I think so. Yes, we need to give away the 833 and some T-shirts. So let's see what you come up with questions for that for the people that are listening on the replay.
All right. So this one, to answer the question, you'll email us at hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And to win the 833A tube, here's our question. A typical AM transmitter would use four of those 833A tubes in it. Two would be used for the final RF amplifier, and two for the audio modulator. Why do they use such high-power tubes for the modulation? You know, when you could just modulate at a lower stage, you know, like around the oscillator, and use a whole lot less power. So send the answer to that to hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could win the 833A tube. And we've got three more of those nice T-shirts to give away. And to be eligible for that, just send in your email with the answer, same address. And the question is, you know, as we just said, a typical AM transmitter uses four of those 833A tubes. One pair is the final RF amplifier to make a kilowatt, and one pair is for the audio modulator. Now, out of those two pair of tubes, which pair is going to wear out first, the RF final amplifier or the modulators? So send that answer to hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and we'll go through and pick three people who guessed right and send them out T-shirts this next week.
Oh, that's great. Well, I look forward to seeing who wins and all that. And speaking of contests, let's see where Cheryl is. We've got a lot of things that she's going to cover here. So let's bring Cheryl on from Northern Illinois. Hi, Cheryl. How are you?
Hi, Bob. Good evening to everybody in the chat room, too. And hi, Gordo. And hi, George. And I wanted to tell you, George, someone had mentioned, and I also want to say we love your T-shirt tonight. And we wanted to just say how great your segment is. We really appreciate it. That should be a standard. That's a real good one there. I wanted to just quick say that I've got this wonderful QSL card from KF0XO from, this is actually in South Dakota here, Rapid City. It's hard to get. I didn't have that state, and it just came in today. So that's my new one. I had to show that. And basically, I wanted to ask you some questions, Bob. I got some questions on the Finn mic. Is that correct? Did I say it right? The Finn microphone. Mm-hmm. Does it come with the IC element? Someone asked in our chat room.
No. It's a dynamic. It has our PR20 in it, and it's a professional microphone that we use in live sound. ZZ Top sings through them. As a matter of fact, a lot of studios are using them, and it's great. But you can use it on amateur radio quite well. A lot of guys, as you just saw. Jerry's using it on his. Usually you'll have to plug it into a, some kind of little mixer or so on, especially with fan of power to get it to light up. So, yeah, a lot of people are using the fin, and it works well on ICOMs once you go through a mixer.
Okay, great. Thanks. And anyone on the panel, a question goes out to, would you care to discuss your experience on the 6 meter band? And is it worth gearing up for? Someone posed the question. So anyone want to take that?
Well, the king of 6 meters is in Southern California. Gordo, how about that question?
Love 6 meters, 50.125. If you've exhausted all the excitement of 10 meters and some of the other bands, then yes, jump up to 6 meters, tune 50.125. Whether you have a vertical ground plane or a horizontal beam or even a dipole, when 6 opens, you will work all over the United States, North and South America as well. And who knows, those of you on the East Coast might even work Europe.
You know, I find, and also on 6 meters, the band isn't open all the time, of course, Gordo. But what I find is most people are listening. So if you'll just throw your call out there or do a nice CQ, you'll be amazed how many people that might be within 50, 100 miles. I'm sure you find that out there. 6 meters is a great band just to communicate on.
You bet it is. So we sure encourage you to try 6 meters, and you'll be hooked, because when the band opens up, signals are so strong you would think they're next door.
Yeah. There you go, Cheryl. That should help you on that answer.
Hey, we do have one question for George. Have you ever built a noise bridge, and how well does it work in tuning an antenna, was the question. Could you like to take that one, George?
Yeah, I've never built one, so I really don't know how well it works. I've heard they work well, and I could see where they would.
Thank you. And Bob, one last thing is, someone asked, is that a 718 on your bench in the background there? I thought I heard you hit a 718 before. So,
not tonight. No, it's an 870 and a 7800 there, and there's a couple of Yaesus over here, and all of the old stuff behind me that I truly love, but don't have a 718 here right now. No.
And one more quick technical question for you, Bob, is how do you go about positioning the microphone, someone asked? A desk versus boom, or talking into the end versus the side? That was kind of a question on someone's mind.
Well, you should talk into the microphone. You should never be more than 2 inches away, because watch what happens when you get further away. That's why I hate desk stands. They allow you to do this, and look what happened to my audio. And then you say, I'll just crank it up. Okay, when you crank it up, looks what happens. It gets real hollow sounding, and you don't want to do that. You lost your transients, you lost your dynamic range, and so when you get back up on it, it all comes back to you. So you never want to be more than a couple of inches away and speak into the microphone. And if you have the proper microphone, it will have good rejection from the rear, so you don't hear fans and ambient noise and all of that. But we need to do a whole thing on it sometime, and we will do that, Cheryl. But I hope that helps whoever answered or asked that question.
Perfect. Excellent. Sounds great. And I have my new antenna up tonight, a new mystery antenna, a little bit longer for 80 and 160 meters. So we're excited about that. I was out there with the big shot with David, and we put that up tonight or this afternoon in the wind. It was a little bit windy, but 70 degrees here in Chicago. It was pretty nice. But I just wanted to say I'll be looking forward to seeing everybody at the AES Superfest in Milwaukee with Bob and Gordon and myself and others. It's going to be a great show. So please come on up to Milwaukee on Friday or Saturday.
We look forward to the weekend. That's going to be great. Okay, last but not least, who do we have that won the contest tonight for the 833?
Well, I could see, I would really think that it's better to look at the chat room. What I could see, I had a K7AGE Randy. Looks like he had the two answers required to win that prize, but I'd really like to take a recount just to make sure before it's fully announced. I'd like to look at that chat room if we could, and then confirm that.
Yeah, well, just so you have their calls, and we can look them up on QRZ, and we'll send them those prizes, and then next week we'll announce exactly where everything went, and we have still have it for the replay. Everybody knows they can go back and listen to George's questions for the 833 and three of the T-shirts. All right. Well, thanks for doing that, Cheryl. And we'll look on the chat room and see who won all of that. That'll be just absolutely super. Gorio, is everything okay? We got it all tied down in Costa Mesa and ready to get on 40 meters tonight?
We are ready. And you can hear in the background, I've got 40 meters tuned in. So we'll meet everybody, 7268. Julian N3JF is going to start things off, and then we'll join you in a few. Thanks, Bob.
Great. Well, thank you. I want to close by saying things about the AM frequencies. Years ago, when we had the AM, the mode was, that was it, what we had, CW and AM. And then came single sideband. And so what happened when they all started converging is there was a gentleman's agreement from 3870 to 3890. That was where the AM frequency or the AMers, that's where we all land. And the sideband guys, it's a gentleman's agreement that they kind of separate from there. So between 3870 and 3890 is where you'll find a lot of AM operation. There's also some down on 3720. So you might want to look down there. On 40 meters, it's 7290. And on 20 meters, it's 14268. And usually on 10, it's around 29.1. So just so you guys know, 2900 to 29.1, right up in there is great on 10 meters when 10 is open. Just so you had some of the frequencies. So very, very good. We had a lot of fun tonight. And George, thanks for all your help. And we'll be looking forward to seeing you next week. And if you get tired of that shirt, well, you can send it to me or whatever.
Well, I would. But it's already personalized.
All right. And Cheryl, thank you so much. Amanda, thank you. And we thank especially John. He's done a great job tonight keeping up with us all. And we'll talk to you all next week right here on Ham Nation. And you know where we all are. You can give us a jingle on the phone. You can better send us a note on email. You have all of our addresses here. Just our calls at ARRL.net gets it. So we're here to help you, and we appreciate you. We will talk very, very soon, hopefully on 40 meters tonight. So from Southern Illinois, this is Bob Heil, K9EID, and we're going to waltz away listening to Joe Walsh and his wonderful music that he's written specifically for Ham Nation. Bye-bye for tonight, 7-3.